I must say I'm very happy to see all of you. I do not know many of you, but I feel very young in your presence because many of you are children. So I thought what we should do is I will sing Jai Radha Madhava with all of you and then tell you a fascinating story which I hope will appeal to, thank you, to all the children. And then I will talk for the grown-ups about a subject matter which I thought about. It's called the two faces of Maya. Two faces like, yes. If I may sound to you a little bit funny, it is because I mostly speak German language and my English is coming from my school days. So, can you understand me, children? Yes? There was one of you, and I believe it was you, whom I saw in Vrindavan, is this correct? When we have this little theater play.
It's
not. Uh-huh. That's the mother, is there? Are you the father? Actually, yes. That is easy to to see. Mm-hmm. So let us sing Jai Radha Madhava. I'm here in case you wonder what in person like me does in this house. I'm here to write a book. It has a very deep title, almost a fearsome title. The book is called The Way of the Great Departure, and it describes my own spiritual longings to depart from the ordinary and conventional ways of material life. The book starts like this. In my heart is a conflict. I hear two voices since I am a child. One of the voices is very silent when the world becomes louder around me. Yes, when the world becomes so loud that it is almost indistinguishable, that voice almost dies. But then when it is silent outside, the voice becomes stronger and tells me, are you really living the life which in the depths of your heart you aspire? Recently this silent voice became so loud that it said, is the real life not flowing past you? And I was afraid when I listened to this little voice inside. Then it starts what I do, I go on a pilgrimage into the Himalayan mountains. I was traveling for a few weeks up the Ganga and went to many holy shrines and holy pastime places. And with this pilgrimage, which was to begin with an external journey, an internal journey started, where I saw many things and got many revelations. So the book is called The Way of the Great Departure. That means to depart from my previous life. And it is a very deep book. It is written in the German language, unfortunately. But I know it will be translated also because there is... devotees have requested me. So this is what happens in this house. In the first story... person who is on a journey and writes it down. Good. So, Hare Krishna. You're ready? Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Simate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paskatya Deshatarine. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Narada Muni, the great saint, was asking Krishna, "My dear Lord, please show me your Maya, your illusory energy. I am a person who very often talks about the need to overcome Maya, illusion. But I myself have never seen her. What is illusion? How does it look like to be an illusion? What is your all-powerful material energy which puts all the conditioned souls into Maya?" Krishna looked for a moment, as if to ask, "Do you really want to see Maya? This is not the best thing to see in the world. Do you want to see that energy of mine which makes the world cry and hope and jump around in boundless joy and then become desperate? Do you want to see my Maya?" "Yes," said Narada Muni, "I desire very much to see Maya." Mangalaga looks shocked. Krishna smiled, mysterious smile, and did not say anything anymore. Now both of them walked, and as they walked, they approached something which looked like a desert. It was a dry patch of land. And Krishna indicated, "My dear Narada, I'm now very thirsty. Can you please go and fetch a glass of water for me?" Narada Muni said, "Yes, if this is your desire, where should I go? I don't remember the way." "Oh," said Krishna, "just go over this desert and you will find a river on the other side, and next to it a village. Ask there." Narada Muni went through the desert. He saw the river, and he saw a few houses He knocked at the first house, but no one answered him. He knocked at the second house. Again, no answer. Then he knocked at the third house. The door opened, and the most beautiful woman stood in the door frame. It looked to Narada Muni that the Creator had placed all the charms of womanly beauty into each of her bodily limbs. "Oh," said the woman, "welcome here. What can I do for you?" Narada Muni answered, "I have just come to get a glass of water for my friend Krishna. He's a little thirsty." "Oh," said the woman, "that is very nice. Come in and sit down. We have prepared a nice sofa for you." Narada Muni sat down, and the next thing he saw, the door which was in the back a little bit, not the front door, but a door which was a second door in the room, opened, and a man came out. The man said, "Oh, young saint, your arrival has been prophesied in ancient scriptures. And when I read the horoscope 3 months ago, the horoscope was also telling that on this day a young saint would come by and he would become the future husband of my daughter who's in marriageable age." "Who?" said Narada Muni. "Yes, and the horoscope said that the name of this young saint is Narada. Is this correct?" "Yes, my original intention was to stay a lifelong celibate, to be very truthful. However, if this is an ancient prophecy written in ancient scriptures and also foretold by the horoscope, then I must agree that this is an arrangement made up in heaven and fetched on the earth." So the marriage was arranged, a little bit fast according to my taste, but this is how it went. Narada Muni became the husband of this wife. Sometimes he thought about the glass of water, but most of the time he forgot it completely. The father of his wife died after a time of, I believe, 5 years. And Narada Muni was made chief of the village. Yes, he had 2 sons, and he wielded the control of a chieftain in that village. Time passed, and to make a long story a little shorter, one day the monsoon rains started to come, but they didn't stop. Who of you knows, my dear children, what is a monsoon rain?
It's a long rain.
Long rains, it lasts for ages. Yes, this is how it looked like. It was raining. I think in American English you say cats and dogs. And in polite English you will maybe say it was raining thick as pillars. The rains were coming down, filling the river before the house of the Narada Muni until it became a raging ocean. soon the river was jumping out of its riverbed, grabbing for the houses and tearing the houses into its water. Then, as the river became more uncontrollable, it approached Narada Muni's house. We are very good listeners. And it dragged Narada Muni's house into the waters. In the last moment, Narada could jump with his family onto a ship. Aniruddha, it was almost like a lifeboat. And he started to roar and roar. Hope it's the right word, is it? Yeah. And the waves were becoming more turbulent. Then one day came. Yes, the boat was going like this. Then one day, one wave came, and it took the wife of Narada Muni and just flashed it into the river. Then the next wave came. Narada Muni was by the time crying helplessly, "Help! Help! Help!" And it was taking the oldest son of Narada Muni, taking him into the river. Then it took the last son of Narada Muni. And finally, one wave came and took the boat as if offering it to the Lord of the Death. Then it came down, broke, and Narada Muni was falling out of the boat. One of the oars, I believe, was exercising its independent nature and hit him behind the ear so that he lost consciousness and started to drown in the raging water. He cried, "Krishna, Krishna." All of a sudden felt that he had a piece of cloth in his hand. "Krishna, please save me." As he opened his eyes, he saw that it was a yellow cloth. Then he looked further up and looked right into the smiling face of the Lord. "Do you now know what is Maya?" "This is my Maya, my illusory energy. It was coming above you when you were forgetting to bring me my glass of water. Please bring me my glass of water." Narada Muni said, "Oh, my dear Lord, where should I go?" "Well, here's this dry patch of land. Cross it. You will find a river there. And on its banks, a settlement. Knock at the last door, and you will see. But don't forget my glass of water." So he went over the desert. He came to the river. He knocked at the houses till he came to the last house. A beautiful woman opened him. No, wait, it will not be a problem. Don't be afraid. And she said, "What do you want, young saint?" "A glass of water for my friend." "Oh, now where you are here, don't you want to sit down for a while?" "No," said Narada Muni, "I appreciate your hospitality, but I'm a little bit in a hurry. Please give me the glass of water." "You're sure?" "I'm absolutely sure, based on experience." So he got the glass of water, and he said, "I will bring it back when it's empty." And he went to Krishna and said, here is your glass of water. Krishna smiled at him and said, do you understand now? Hare Krishna, that's my story. I'm happy that I could grasp the fascination of my youngest audience, which is not always easy. I think we all understand the point of the story, that in our lives we must have a transcendental mission, something which we look forward to. It can be a service, it can be a project, it can be a plan. Like in this house, there is a very, very ecstatic plan by the inmates. They will move into a Gauranga Bhavan, and from there they will move to Lord Gauranga's holy place, Sridhar Mayapur. It is a very fascinating plan. Whatever, think of your glass of water, something which you bring to the Lord, and then the illusory energy of the Lord will not be able to exercise any power over you. But if you forget, you will be swept away. Hare Krishna. So now I have ended the first part of my lecture, because after this I will get extremely, let me say, it will be a little bit difficult to understand for children. So your parents will be able to tell you the rest in simple, digestible language. But I think now there's a plan. You please follow. What is your name? Did you like the story? What an interesting point, isn't it? Yes, it is an interesting point, and it is very true. And now I will continue this. I'm using this story in an illustration to a lecture which I will hold now. I thought we should do it like this. I will talk a little bit about my lecture. I have some concrete points which I want to present to your attention. So this will be a little monologue for about 20 minutes, I hope, not more. It depends sometimes when I get into talking, it has become long. And then I thought, see if you do have any questions. I think, first of all, to the subject of the lecture, and then to any other subject which interests you. And then we will see how the evening runs. I must admit that I feel a little shy before all of you. It is because I do not know you. I'm accustomed to lecturing before large gatherings of people. You might have heard from Jane and Wayne that I'm was very often together with what was called the Gauranga Bhajan group. It's a group of devotees who did large festivals with sometimes up to 30,000 people. Since that time, I have been traveling and giving lectures to large groups. Whenever I come to a small group like this one, I feel shy. It's just the opposite way around. When I'm before many, no problem. Because it's not personal. But when we are in smaller gatherings like this one, then I wish much more that we were to know each other better. Because obviously the subjects which are discussed in spiritual circles are of a very, personal nature, even intimate nature. because it refers to those subjects which are most private to all of us, our own spiritual advancement. And since I'm addressing them and don't know you, it is a little, we have to make the best out of the situation. Please accept me as a spiritual brother and not as a stranger from a different country who doesn't even speak 100% English. I know I speak English, but different, totally different than you when I went first. The children, Dauji and Mangalath, heard me speaking. They just looked at me. Oh, what's wrong with him? I told them I never speak your language. I'm sorry. It sounds different than what you, the way your parents talk. Good. This much as a request to all of you. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains to us that he has a divine nature called Maya, which covers the living entity in this material world. This Maya has two effects on our consciousness. The first is called in Sanskrit Avaranatmika, and the second Prakshepatmika. Avaranatmika means just the covering influence. We all are covered by this material body and by our material mind, which act like two types of filters. What I mean with this word filter is that our eyes only allow us to see a certain percentage of colors, of light, the brightness of light, and so on. They act like filters. Were a frog to hop into this room and report to us his findings, he would most probably tell of super-dimensional flies who, different than normal flies, sit peacefully on the ground. That is what be his perception. A frog wouldn't be able to distinguish a pole on the meadow from a professor. It looks all the same to him because his eyes are not capable for distinguishing forms like we do. Our senses, the senses of our body, act like a filter. They cover us and don't give us true informations, but just conditioned information. Our mind is also a cover, which covers us. According to our mindset, we see things as desirable or undesirable. We see persons as honorable personalities or despicable crooks. I know that if my grandfather were to attend this meeting, he would severely criticize us all for sitting on the floor because he was an orthopedic man and thought it was not so healthy to sit on the floor for the spine. We are covered with this material body and this material mind, which is the covering of the material energy. Since time immemorial, we have been accepting such covers. We did not only have this body. No, once you might have been a whale in the canal of Bristol, chasing for another whale. You were maybe a German calling the Englishmen rats who live on an island. Hare Krishna. You might have been an enlightened yogi looking with equal eyes upon all human beings. We have had so many lives before this one who were all covering us with two types of covering, a physical and a mental covering. This is the first effect of Maya, of the material energy. Maya covers us, avaranatmika shakti, this is called. And the second influence of Maya is what is called prakshepatmika shakti, that is the pulling energy. What pulls us? Do you have any idea? Anything? Is there anything which pulls you?
Senses, desire.
Yes, very strong pulling factor. Yes, the prakshepatmika shakti means the pulling force. Once you are covered with the material body, your material desires begin to pull you in that direction. As human beings, we are pulled towards the objects of taste. Today, we had apple crumble in this house, which was so extremely fantastic that I almost ate too much. But at the last moment, I could say, well, we talked today about the pulling of power of Maya. I better don't fall prey to it. People are pulled by the desires to move from house to house, from continent to continent. In the Vedas we hear from planet to planet even. Yes, from universe to universe. Simply unfulfilled material desires, which are the representative of Maya. I don't know if you ever had this experience, how Maya started to work on your psychology by pulling you in a certain direction. Maybe you wanted a certain shirt or a certain holiday, or a certain partner, or a certain amount of English pounds. That's called the pulling, or the avaranatmika shakti. Maya is very, very big. Maya is very insurmountable. In India, they tell you a story of the Force 99. Once, they say there was a very poor family who lived happily next to the house of a rich man. This rich man was very rich, but somehow miserable. His wife one day said to him, "What's wrong with you? You have so much money, but you are more miserable than anyone I've seen. Even the people living next to us, who are so poor that they have nothing, are not as miserable as you. What's wrong with you?" The man almost cried. He said, "Force 99. Wife said, "What is Force 99? Do you want to see Force 99? Yes, said the wife. "Okay, I will use the happy family as my testing ground. You will see them cry by Force 99. Bring me 99 rupees." The wife left. So now in the morning you will see false 99. The man sat down and he waited. And when it was around 1 o'clock in the morning, he took the bag of rupees, threw it through the window, I mean open window, it's India, into the court of the happy family, which was sleeping on beds, which were, you know, standing underneath the smiling stars. Boom! "What's that?" asked the woman, the wife of the poor man. "Oh, I don't know. Maybe one star has come down not far from here. Let us continue to sleep." So they slept. In the morning, they found a bag of rupees. "Ooh, rupees came overnight. Let's count them," said the wife. So they counted the rupees and found out 99.0 rupees. "Oh," said the man, "maybe we should make it 100 rupees. What do you think?" Now I must inform you that rupees in the time of our stories was something else than rupees today. It was today the inflation made the rupees a little weaker than it was then. "Yes, to earn 1 rupee with our family, we need one week to make it earn an extra rupee. We need 1 week." "Okay," they said. "It's worth one week. We are working already, but we need to make this English language Überstunden, you know. Special hours, additional hours." Mm-hmm. How do you say?
Overtime.
Overtime. Thank you very much. That sounds right. We need to make overtime. So instead of reading the Bhagavad Gita in the evening, they made overtime. But they also had more expenditures because now they had 99 rupees. They could buy many things. New socks for the children. So more and more they had to make 2 rupees, 3 rupees. The rupee became more. And as a result, they did not have any more peace in their minds. Force 99 meant more and more and more and more. Hare Krishna. We will tell you what is the car. Oh. So force 99 means greed, to have more, to make overtime to get more. And this force 99 destroyed the life of the happy family. Soon they had beds which were better, but they didn't sleep any longer on the underneath the smiling stars. No, they had to move inside because they had made nice sleeping rooms. They were working for more and more and more. Hare Krishna. So this is what happens when material desires become Because there is a secret about these material desires. Whatever you do to fulfill them, they become bigger. It's almost whatever you give in the fire to quench the thirst of the fire becomes bigger. Maybe you have experience with this in your life. See some. You never asked this question. So the material energy is very difficult to overcome because of these two powers, these two shaktis, the covering and the pulling shakti. If you want to overcome it, however, you should surrender to Krishna. Krishna says that anyone who gives his life into his hands can easily overcome the otherwise insurmountable power of material energy. And here is what this could mean for you. When Maya comes and begins to knock at your door, to cover your true knowledge and to pull you, there's a few things which you might be able to do. The first thing is, you can meditate about the quality of Maya's pleasures. Usually, Maya's offers are sweet in the beginning, but poisonous in the end. That's the quality of all material pleasures. In the beginning, it agitates your senses or your mind with a subtle or gross tinkling. But what was nectar in the beginning often turns to be poison at the end. How this is so is explained beautifully by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. In the shloka Dhyaya Dro Vishayam Pungsam, it means, while looking at the objects of the senses, you develop an attachment for it. From attachment, frustration comes, because they don't fulfill your expectations, and then anger arises. From anger, the loss of memory appears. And once memory is lost, you fall back into the material swamp. If you want to see how this works, take a simple folding chair, move in the Oxford Street, and sit down before a computer shop. You might see a passionate young man passing the computer shop and then standing still and looking at the new Torpedo 3000 super ecstatic computer with multifunctions. He looks at the objects of the senses, and now the young man has become attached to it. He wants to obtain the computer. By the arrangement of the company, you can buy it by paying installments, right? Mm-hmm. Is the right word? Not everything at once. So he begins to toil a little harder to get the installments. He has a computer and he types his love letter to his wife. for the birthday. But then when he puts the computer on next morning, he finds out the program crashed and the letter is lost. Oh no, I thought this wouldn't happen with this new Torpedo 3000 super duper mega computer. Ah, he becomes angry at the poor thing. If this happens again tomorrow, he starts, he does the same thing, then a virus eats up his program. I don't want to take you through the whole thing. Finally, he gets so angry at the whole thing that he throws the computer out of the window. It breaks and it's finished. Now, this simple experiment you can also make in marriages. People marry with high expectations, they're not fulfilled, and then the raging fire of anger and frustration devours the memory, what should be done and what should not be done. Human relationships, everything is destroyed by the simple invasion route of Maya. By contemplating the objects of sense gratification, attachment arises. From attachment, frustration, and then anger comes forth, and finally the memory is lost. When we talk of memory loss in spiritual life, we talk about forgetting what your life is meant to accomplish, what you are meant to do in your human form of life. So when you are tempted by Maya here and tempted there, stop before it is too late. Very often when Maya comes, it is good to become a little bit peaceful, to calm ourselves down, and ask, maybe there's something else behind it which needs fulfillment. For instance, I have an auntie who had a serious problem. She would overeat regularly. I think it can be a disease to eat too much, because it becomes like a compulsion. She became so distressed because of this, but it didn't help. Whenever something went wrong, she got up in the night and plundered the refrigerator and ate too much. So the family, you know, I remember we held an emergency meeting. I was also called by phone from the temple, and you know what to do. And I said, well, maybe she needs just simply a partner. Maybe that's the reason why she always eats too much. Maybe this is what is called a surrogate satisfaction. Satzbefriedigung. Maybe that's a surrogate satisfaction. So often when we are so much hankering for something like a film or a movie which is maybe not the highest caliber of human enlightenment, you know, when we feel so much pulled towards the joys of sex, when we feel so much pull to earn money, there's something which is wrong inside of us, something which needs fulfillment, but which is not fulfilled by these surrogates. Maya often comes when we are weak, when we are not satisfied inside of us, when we are not in the proper position in our lives, when we do not have fulfilling relationships and so on. Then we are weak, in other words, emotionally unbalanced. But if we just follow Maya's, how do you say, Maya's waving at us, without solving the real underlying lack, we will just run for the will-o'-the-wisp, which can never be caught. So when Maya calls you, first thing is think about the pleasure of the quality of the pleasure of Maya. Nectar at the beginning, but poison at the end. But then also think, maybe there's something wrong in me which needs to be satisfied and which can be satisfied spiritually. Most of the times, Maya, the waves of Maya, can only get a person who is a little superficial in his or her life. A person who is deeply rooted in Krishna consciousness is anchored and cannot be so easily shaken by the waves of Maya. When Maya, in other words, comes and threatens to cover your consciousness so that you become spiritually dull, or threatens to pull you away from spiritual life, then you must become deeper. To become deeper, it's very often very nice if you can develop a spiritual vision. See, in this life there are two types of visions. One is called the apara and the other is the tattva vichar. Apara means the external vision. Like by external vision, we are here, a couple of young men and women listening to someone who speaks. But if we look from the tattva vichar, we have a completely different picture. We see eternal souls on the journey to self-realization. We see maybe that many of us had past lives where we were already endeavoring for the spiritual path. It's called tattva vichara, or the deeper spiritual vision. My experience is, if we are deeply rooted in the spiritual vision, the superficial promises of Maya cannot get us so easily. Do you also have made this experience in your own personal lives? Silence. No. No? When we are superficial, it's easy for illusions to get us when we are deeply rooted. No, it's not possible. And finally, for Maya to, if we want to be free of Maya, we need to give a soul to our spiritual life. Just like the body is a dead body without a soul, our faith in Krishna consciousness is dead, dead, very dead, white dead, if there's no enthusiasm in our spiritual life. It's described, enthusiasm is the soul of Shraddha, a belief, even a divine belief, without enthusiasm is dead. When we join spiritual life, the enthusiasm is very, is big, because everything is so new, because everything is so challenging, because everything is so different. But then, as we go on in spiritual life, the magic of the new veins. Vain? Sounds like vain. because we have seen it, we have heard it, we have felt it, heavy. I would say we really have seen it, felt it, heard it, we would not lose our enthusiasm. In the beginning, our enthusiasm is fixed on the externals. I remember when I became first a devotee, it was so exciting, because you must know, I was a rebel. Finally, I had found it. When I was in my dhoti, I could see that from the far out people, I was the most far out. I had made it to the top of eccentricity. That gave me very much enthusiasm. But obviously this was external. Just like a boy who gets a book and then becomes enthusiastic. Oh, I have joined the world of the grown-ups. I also have a book underneath my arm. And a new devotee becomes enthusiastic by externals. But just like the boy who cannot read the book, puts it aside. Also the new devotee puts Krishna consciousness aside in his or her life, or the excitement of Krishna consciousness aside, because he or she is not yet so deeply rooted in spiritual life. If you want to give your spiritual life a soul, you must know where are the sources of enthusiasm. That's a secret. Each one of you, if you do not solve this question, your spiritual life will become not so exciting as it as you thought it was in the beginning. I'm saying you thought it was because it was not yet the deep enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is the soul of our belief. And we need to find out where it is, where we can find it. Just like if we are planning a journey through the desert, then we need to also plan where can we get water all the time. Just as someone who drives with the jeeps through the Himalayas must plan where are the petrol pumps. They're very rare there by the bay. So a person who wants to live a life in Krishna consciousness must find out where are the sources of enthusiasm. A very good source is to go to the Holy Dham. I do not know if Jane and Wayne and Aniruddha and Dauji and Mangala have told you. When they came to Mayapur and Vrindavan, they really got, I think in English, in colloquial English, we say a big boost. They got a big boost in spiritual life. Prabhupada said to go to the Holy Dham means to get an impetus to go back home, back to Godhead. How nicely it is put. To go to the Holy Dham means to get an impetus. That's one source of enthusiasm. Another source of enthusiasm is deep and fulfilling relationships with devotees, where one can really talk about the things which matter most in one's life. It's not possible with every and any devotee, because we may not be on the same wavelengths. This how one expresses it. But we meet devotees who are on our, where we can communicate and feel also secure enough to communicate, it might be a source of enthusiasm. Another source of enthusiasm is if we listen to the holy name. There's a shloka in Patyavali that the holy name is the proviant. Proviant? what you take when you go on a journey, the eatables.
Provision.
Provision, thank you. The chanting of the holy name is the provision for those who go on the spiritual journey. But there are three rules when we chant. Listen. We should think that the Lord can reveal himself at the next mantra. This we should chant. Okay, this mantra my mind went away, but next one. This, when we do this, after some time, the Lord does reveal himself. Please try this. In this connection, I have written a book called The Nectar Ocean of the Holy Name, which will be soon available in English language. It's edited by two English speakers, so that it is easily digestible English. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So this... this is the other source of enthusiasm. You all please find it out for yourself. Where are the sources of your enthusiasm? And then Maya cannot have any power over you. When Maya sees, as I have written down, that you become enthusiastic for Krishna consciousness, then she will show her other face to you, the face called Yoga Maya. There's a prayer. Oh Yoga Maya, when will you show mercy to me by lifting up the curtain of illusion with which you shroud the universe in your external form of Mahamaya? You are known as Kula Devi, the traditional worshipable goddess of the Vaishnavas dynasties. I have heard of your glories and activities from the Vedic scriptures. You take all those souls who are averse to Krishna and bind them within the material world. But to a person whose good fortune gradually dawns, allowing him to again become favorably disposed to Krishna, you award liberation and make him free from all grief and fear. O my dear mother, showing your causeless mercy to this servant, give me a place in Vrindavan, for you are Yoga Maya herself. In other words, Maya, which used to, how do you say, bewilder you, pull you away from Krishna, when she sees that you become enthusiastic in your spiritual life, shows you a beautiful face, the face of Yoga Maya, which in every step brings you closer to Krishna. It's described that she will come at that time and put a garland around you and say, my dear devotee, you have overcome my influence as Yoga Maya. Now I will take you to Krishna. Come with me. The same energy has two faces. Which one do we want to see? This is a rhetorical question. Srila Prabhupada once went with his devotees on a pilgrimage through India, and the devotees became extremely exhausted. So they stopped at an ashram called, I believe, Ananda Ashram. It was headed by one of his dear god brothers. So each day, Srila Prabhupada sent the devotees into the Indian Ocean to swim and in this way regain their energies back. But the devotees, one devotee in particular, thought that this was Maya. It was so nice. And the beach looked like from a tourist agency. The palm trees were shaking softly in the wind. One could walk for 500 meters through the rolling waves until one would get into deeper water. So he came and said, Prabhupada, I feel this is Maya. This is just like a tourism. All this water, sun, and holiday atmosphere. Prabhupada said, where is Maya? Don't you see? The ocean is the belly of the Lord. The palm trees are the hairs of the Lord, standing erect. The sun is the eye of the Lord. I can only see Krishna. Where is Maya? This is what happens to a devotee who becomes enthusiastic in his or her spiritual life. What was previously seen as a diverting, deluding energy of the Lord, who would always come in new costumes, bewildering him in different ways, becomes a help. Just like in our little story, Narada Muni was enthusiastic to do his service. Then Maya could or would not touch him, and so on. So I want to request all of you to please go daily to the sources of enthusiasm, drink the waters of enthusiasm and feel the strength of enthusiasm in your spiritual lives. Then you will see the other face of Maya. The curtain, so to say, the deluding curtain of Maya will fall down, and you will see the very attractive energy of the Lord pulling you back home, back to Godhead. Yes, this is what I wanted to share with all of you. This is my present. Oops. Remember, the flowers are falling. The message, to make it extremely compact and clear, is if you, Maya has two faces. If you want to see the divine attractive face, you need to become enthusiastic in your spiritual life by saying also no to Maya, but mostly by saying yes to deep spiritual practices. So this was my little presentation for all of you. Do you have any questions regarding this or other subjects?
Maharaj, yes. Sometimes there seems to be a conflict between external service and actually personal devotional practices. The conflict's usually called time.
Yeah.
How do we resolve this one?
Yeah. You mean you do have deep desires for deep spiritual and inner practices, but at the same time you have lots to do in devotional service, and you cannot bring the two deep together? Is it like that?
And the Force 99 as well. That's
yeah. Yeah, the restlessness. I want to give you as an answer an aha moment in my own life, because this was for maybe 20 years of my spiritual life also a difficult thing. The aha moment happened in somewhere in Slovenia at a summer camp where we had invited the congregation, 600 young people. I was sitting in a lecture of Sridhar Swami when all of a sudden he said, "Okay, it's time for a quiz." He went underneath the table and put something which looked like an aquarium on the table and started to fill it with stones as big as fists until it was full. Then he looked at us and said, "Is it full now?" We said, "Yes, why?" He smiled mischievously, took another bucket from underneath the table. It was covered with a long tablecloth. It had little stones in there. He poured them on it, shook it, and we were amazed how many more smaller stones fitted into the aquarium. "Is it full now?" he asked. "Most probably not," said the clever ones among us. So he took up a few other buckets of sand, poured them over the thing, and then they're like, and we were amazed how much more sand fitted into it. "Is it full now?" he said. And with one voice, although no one of us had an idea what would come next, we shouted, "No! It's not full!" And he took a few other buckets full with some water, poured them in, and whoosh, 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 until it was full. "Full now." And he was not sure. He said, "It's full now." What is the point? And I thought that the point was something which my neighbor said, but I didn't want to say it because you never know, maybe you look like a fool before everyone. My neighbor said, it shows us, just like between these stones, there was always a free space which still could be fulfilled. In our lives, we always have time to do more things, spiritual or material or whatever. And Sridhar Swami looked at him with glowing eyes and said, "Exactly, that is not the point." Then he said, "Listen, what is the point? If I wouldn't have put the big stones in the beginning, I would have never had the opportunity to put them in later. For instance, if I would have filled the thing with the sand, there would have no place for the big stones any longer. I needed to put them in first, then the other, that is, small stones, sand, and water could be put in. In the same way it is with your life. You need to find time to put in the big stones, the things which matter most for you in your life. The rest will come, will come on its own. It will be put on its own. But if you always wait until in your life to put in the big stones at the end, you will never put them in. If you wait with good rounds, till the evening. If you wait with your readings in Holy Scriptures till the evening, it will never be put into your life. You need to put the essential spiritual things in first, and then the other things will find their way around it. Believe me, you may think, oh, he's a Swami, he doesn't know, you know, household duties, children, a husband who comes back from work and is hungry, and washing duties, and so on. He doesn't know what he's talking about. But there was a time in my life, let me say, I want to say it like this, but believe me, someone like me can be busy from morning to night, and so on, with the hundreds of people who want to see him, the hundreds of letters which are on the desk, the hundreds of things which can be done, and so on. And I have made this experience: if you put in the big stones first, also as a Swami, if you take the time for the reading for your own spiritual life, then the hundreds of letters get written better, the hundreds of people get better advices, and you mysteriously have time. It's mysterious because I can't tell you from where it comes, the time, but it is always there. If you just work and work and work and do these duties, which are devotional, I know, or which are at least necessary to keep our operation flowing, but we forget the big stones, we will lead an unhappy life, and it will not be much different from the lives of the people whom we want to enlighten, the fallen souls. Please try to identify your big stones, what is absolutely essential to you, then put them in every week or every day. You will find wonders happening in your life, and you will be much more satisfied.
Project which is giving is a source of inspiration and enthusiasm.
Yeah.
But in trying to when that project come about, it appears that so many problems come. Is that to be seen that Maya's putting those problems there for us to persevere more? Is that?
Mm-hmm. When a devotee sees a problem, he says, "Wow, an impetus to surrender more. Welcome." It's good to learn. If you can change your vision, you can also see problems as something very, very intense. For instance, me. 1 month ago, I was almost going to the operation table. I had such inhuman back pains that the doctors just came and they said, "We can't tolerate you wasting away." I couldn't find shelter even in lying on the back or on the side or anywhere. It was so absolutely brutally cruel, the pain, and so strong that I just saw myself being pushed over the cliff of despair. But then I thought, I deny. Sorry. I decline or I reject the idea that this is a problem. It's a possibility for me to learn. And all of a sudden, the pain became my guru. He taught me to take shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. This, you know, whatever intensity I could muster. And in this way, come to a platform beyond the paining body and mind. When problems come to a devotee, he should not see them as problems. He should see them as gifts of God to become more intense or more focused in spiritual life. And then, just like the dew evaporates with the morning sun, the problems also evaporate, or the problematic nature evaporates, and you can see new. Only a weak-hearted person runs away when some obstacles appear. It works. It is. I still have to sit like this and be very careful with my movements done, so that the spine doesn't jump out of the right position. But I'm so happy for this. I hope what I say, I'm saying this. Keep in place down there. And what happened with the vertebrae?
Vertebrae.
Stay in place, please. Yeah, obstacles. They are only obstacles if you see them as obstacles. Sometimes it's very hard to not see them as obstacles. It's almost like you have children. You are.
Buddha's father.
Yeah.
They're obstacles.
Sometimes when you have children, you know, they can, the situation comes where they really want to know who's stronger. I don't know. At least I was like this when I was a child. But if you just decline to see them as obstacles or as something negative, but see them as children, the godsend children, then the whole picture turns also in their attitude towards you. But if you come to the level where you see them, oh no, have no time, have to always take care of them, they get on my nerves like 10,000 10,000 insects. If you come to this level, I don't know, but some parents come to this, then a whole other picture starts in the education. Then it becomes very hellish for both children and parents. But if you can remain on that level where you see them, oh, they are godsend, that Krishna sent them to me, that I can take care of them, then it is wonderful. They are so much love and affection given and taken, and so on and so forth. But sometimes it's difficult. I don't know, but I can imagine. So in Germany we have now a project called Goloka Dham, where there are many parents, and sometimes parents tell me that, Hare Krishna. gets a little late. What is the time? My watch is somehow not. Half past nine, that means 9:30. This is scandalously late. So I think I will end my little presentation here. It would be nice to see all of you. Tomorrow we will have a special occasion in the manor. It's a marriage of Sitaram Prabhu. I don't know if some of you know him. But then Saturday, Sunday, we have a special Sunday feast. Many Swamis are here. Many God brothers of mine are there. Are you all from the nearby here?
Yes.
Cardiff, what? How far is Cardiff from where we are?
25 miles.
Yeah,
25
miles.
Yeah, 60 miles.
63 miles. Not so near.
Further
north.
Cardiff is?
No,
we're UK.
From west.
North west, west Wales, we're from 60 miles that way towards the island.
Uh-huh.
Sort of up and across.
Oh, yeah.
It's quite a way, I didn't realize.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Is it true that in Wales it's a mystical place? I heard this in my childhood.
Very old stories.
Uh-huh.
That come from the land and the people who lived here.
Uh-huh.
So, yes, I've got quite a few mystical traditions.
Have you seen mystical beings yourself yet?
The land's very old, isn't it? The Welsh, the rock has been, it's very, very old.
Uh-huh.
Like the Himalaya is very young, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, we have all the tales and the legends. And
the
homes of the gods in the Himalayas, but it's actually a very young land, isn't it?
Uh-huh. In comparison to...
Whereas the land in Wales is very, very old. The rock and the earth and that.
That's why, because it's so old, it has...
It holds things, isn't it? It holds energies and the houses do, the land does everything.
Information from the past.
Yeah, that's right.
Good, so... I think as a host, do we have some prasadam for our guests?
Good.